Did you know that potassium cyanide, commonly known as cyanide, is a colorless crystalline salt used in gold mining, organic synthesis, electroplating, and most commonly used in jewelry for gliding and buffing? But did you also know that this chemical can be highly toxic for humans? Since the longest times, we have no clue of what this toxic substance tastes like. Well, many have tried consuming it for the benefit of science, but all they could ever convey was the alphabet S before they tragically passed away. S could be sour, sweet, or spicy. It is apparently acidic in nature, which suggests that its taste could be sour. But I guess we shall never know with certainty. But we do know that it has deadly effect on our bodies. Today's sinner, Mallika, knew this, and that's where she got her MO from. And subsequently, her coined criminal name became Cyanide Mallika. The word greed means intense and selfish desire for something, especially wealth, power, or food. And in today's case, we have clear evidence of how greed for wealth can be extremely brutal for the lives of innocent people. Cyanide Mallika's case is a story of a simple woman who was so incredibly aspirational that nothing could stand in the way of her dreams, not even human lives. She was unsatisfied with whatever life was giving her. She wanted more, much more. She had this greed to have a luxurious life but wanted to do nothing to work hard for it. She is also popularly known as India's first convicted female serial killer. And I'm telling you, this case is mind-boggling. Now let's dive into the world of cyanide and greed on today's episode of Sins of Asia. Well, before we get into the actual episode, I just want to apologize. I'm a little raspy and I did not upload any podcast for the past like week because I've been so sick. My throat has been hurting, but today I'm feeling a little better. So I thought, let's give it a go. So that is a disclaimer and I'm sorry if I really sound horrible right now, but I guess the show must go on, right? So yeah, now let's dive into the actual case. K.D. Kempama. Well, generally I like to dig deep into criminals' background, but unfortunately there is not many details on Kempama or her childhood or her family. But we do know that Kempama was from Kagalipura, a village along Kanakpur Road on the outskirts of Bangalore, which is in the southern state of Karnataka in India. There is no solid detail I found on her education, but in the book titled The Deadly Dozens by Anirban Bhattacharya, the author did claim that she studied till 5th standard and after that she had to quit as her parents were not able to send her to school for any further education. Kempama was ambitious, always drawn to the more luxurious, comforting lifestyle, but was married off at a very young age to Devraj, who was a tailor who worked at the National Institute of Mental Health and Neuroscience. She did not have that materialistic, comforting life in her childhood, and after her marriage, also she wished for that luxury, but it wasn't fulfilled. She then, over time, had 3 children, but domestic life was not for an ambitious Kempama. She still dreamed of having a luxurious life, but was still in the favor of the easiest paths towards her dreams and goals. She wanted to become rich quickly, so she started her own chit fund business, which offers easy access to credit. For those of you who don't know what a chit fund is, it's a business, kind of a type of rotating savings and credit association system, which is practiced widely across Asian countries, which may or may not be regulated by the government. The chit, that is the financial agreement wherein a certain number of persons or subscribers enter into an agreement that subscribes to a certain sum of money by a way of installment over a definite period of time. Each subscriber shall in turn be entitled to a prize amount as specified in the chit agreement. As far as I know, chit fund businesses are largely dependent on one's luck. Now, I don't know what exactly went wrong, but unfortunately, Kempama's business bore huge losses. And since she was the entrepreneur here, she and her husband were engulfed in debts. Frustrated, her husband then threw Kempama out of the house. She was now homeless, had no family and no money. So, she took up a few odd jobs here and there, including becoming a domestic worker in houses. And she of course stole from these houses. Later, she became a goldsmith's assistant. The goldsmith assistant job is where Mallika meets her partner in crime, her weapon, potassium cyanide. She obtained it from the gold jewelry shops where it was used to clean gold jewelry. With the help of movies, she learnt about cyanide and its usage as a poison for killings. The cyanide thing would have been a borrowed concept, but the rest of the plan was original. She then chose and planned her murderous path. On October 19th, 1999, Kempamma was at the Jalagaramma temple in Hoskote, a taluka in Bangalore. There, she saw a 30-year-old vulnerable and troubled woman who had visited the temple to seek some mental relief from her problems in life. Kempamma sensed the woman's mental turmoil and approached her, disguised as a holy woman. She introduced herself as Lakshmi and proceeded to lend her a sympathetic ear. Few words of hope and assurance from Kempamma were solace to the troubled woman's soul. Right words at the right time and at the right place landed Kempamma to her first victim. Her name was Mamta Rajan. Mamta was desperate and wanted to solve her life's problems so badly that she blindly believed every word uttered from this stranger Lakshmi, aka Kempamma. She failed to understand the true intentions of Lakshmi behind her holy avatar. Mamta voiced her problems to Lakshmi, to which Lakshmi suggested a performance of holy mandala puja on the pretext of giving her solace from her problems in a divine way. Mandala puja is considered as a very powerful puja that grants fulfillment of all the desires if done with full devotion and dedication. It is usually done to please the favorite deity of the person, whichever god it might be, and thereby be blessed with boons and good tidings. The night of 29th of October, exactly 10 days after this current meeting was decided to be the auspicious night for conducting the puja at a secluded place or a temple on the outskirts of the city. But Lakshmi had put forward two quite unusual conditions in front of Mamta. The two unusual conditions were that Mamta would wear all of her gold jewelry in order to please the gods and would not tell anyone, not even her family members, about this puja. If she did, then this mandala puja would not work and her prayers won't get answered. Mamta had 10 days to think clearly about all of this. She had two very unusual conditions in front of her, which were screaming major red flags, enough to make any person suspicious of this puja and Lakshmi herself. But y'all know what Mamta did? Exactly what Lakshmi had asked her to do. She ignored all of these red flags, kept mum about this puja, never told any of her family members about the puja, and has decided 10 days later on the night of 29th October, she wore all of her gold jewelry and proceeded to the place where she was supposed to meet Lakshmi for this puja. After reaching the temple and under the pretense of needing privacy, Lakshmi rented a room in the chaltery attached to it for the puja. Once inside the room, she pretended as if she was performing a puja by chanting some gibberish words and then offered Mamta a bowl of holy water to drink as a part of this ritual. Minutes after the holy water touched Mamta's lips and entered her body, she fell unconscious and was soon out of breath, lying on the floor. This happened because the holy water was laced with cyanide in it. Mamta drank cyanide-infused water, which within moments prevented her cells from absorbing oxygen, which in turn overwhelmed the heart, respiratory system, and nervous system, leading to her death. Kempamma then stripped Mamta of all of her gold jewelry and walked away without any ounce of remorse or fear in her face. Dr. Prabhakar Reddy of Wokad Hospital said, and I quote, "Even a few grams of cyanide powder can kill in minutes. Cyanide powder is absorbed into the body very fast, especially if administered below the tongue. At room temperature, it is lethal as solid, liquid or gas. It can kill when mixed with food and kills faster when administered on empty stomach. It prevents the cells from getting oxygen. The victim turns blue and is dead within 5 to 10 minutes. End quote. In the year 2000-2001, Kempamma was performing a similar ritual in a troubled woman's house, and there she tried to rob valuables and jewelry. The victim realized it on time and was able to escape. This victim was saved by her family and Kempamma was arrested by the police of Bidadi, which is a town situated on the Bangalore-Mysuru expressway. As the case was looked upon only as an attempted robbery, Kempamma was released from the prison only after serving 6 months. 7 years had passed and not even a single person had died at the hands of Kempamma. No cyanide killings, no robberies, nothing was reported. You can call this an after effect of the imprisonment life or Parivartan effect, which essentially means change of heart and soul. But again, if Kempamma had stopped killing at this point, I don't think she would have been on the list of serial killers list and this episode would not have existed. Anyways, we realized that just like other serial killers, Kempamma too had a cooling off period of hers. There were certain claims that she killed many people during this period, but this remains a mystery to this day. In the month of October 2007, Kempamma struck again, and this time she struck with a full-blown bang. In the matter of 2 months, from 10th of October to 18th of December 2007, Kempamma killed not one, not two, but 5 women in just 2 months. I told you this is a mind-boggling case. Well, her second victim after Mamta was Elizabeth. Elizabeth was a 52-year-old woman from Satanur village in the north of Bangalore. Elizabeth was troubled and was praying in the temple as she couldn't find her missing granddaughter. Kimpama's eyes landed on Elizabeth, her next easy prey. She then brainwashed her and lured her to the Kabalamma temple for the Mandala Puja, and the dreadful cyanide history repeated itself. Within a few days, Kimpama killed her third victim, 60-year-old woman named Yashodhama. She was distressed and wanted relief from her asthma problem, which is an inflammatory disease of the airways of lungs. She was killed with the same MO at Siddhaganga Mutt near Tumkur city. Her fourth victim, again a 60-year-old senior woman named Muniamma, she was from Yelahanka, the oldest suburbs in Karnataka. She just wished to sing devotional songs. Kempamma lured her to Yediyangar Siddhalingeshwar temple and poisoned her there and repeated her same MO. Next was a 60-year-old woman named Pillamma. Pillamma was a temple priest at the Hebal temple. Kimpamma told Pillamma that she would sponsor a new arch for the Hebal temple. Kimpamma then weaved a story and took Pillamma to a secluded place at Madhur Vaidyanathpura, a town arranged on the bank of Shimsha River in Bangalore itself, and killed her there, making Pillamma her fifth victim. Kimpamma's last victim was Nagveni. Nagveni was a 30-year-old woman who was praying at the temple wishing to become pregnant as she was childless and wanted a son. Kimpamma of course sensed Nagveni's discomfort and with manipulative words told her about the performance of Mandala Puja, to which a hopeful Nagveni agreed. And then we all know what follows. A murder. Kimpamma poisoned Nagveni at Ghati Subramanya temple in Dodabalapur. These last five murders took place in dharamshalas where no one could have come to the victim's aid. Now let's go over Kempama's MO. First, she identified a sad, gullible and distressed, vulnerable woman devotee around the temple complex in the outskirts of Bangalore. She then befriended them by portraying herself as a deeply pious woman who had answers to all of their problems. Then, she proceeded to weave a story and convince them for Mandala Puja at a secluded place. And most importantly, she would tell them to dress in all of their valuable jewelry for the ritual so that it would work and please the gods. She would unknowingly poison them with cyanide-laced water or prasad. If the victim was not willing to consume the laced item, she would grasp the victim by their hair, pull their head back and forcefully thrust cyanide into their mouth. And finally, she would rob their jewelry and valuables and just calmly exit the property, as if nothing had happened. She's a cold-blooded murderer. Nagveni's murder led the police opening an investigation to hunt the mysterious temple killer. Kempamma was arrested on 31st of December 2007 while at a bus stop. She was arrested while trying to peddle off jewelry that she stole from her victim, and she was using the name Malika. Hence, it was the police who gave her the name Cyanide Malika because when she introduced herself to the last victim, she used the forged name Malika. When her plea was taken by the police, she admitted her guilt and reportedly told the police during interrogation that she was involved in other similar killings. She also told the authorities that she acted all alone. She confessed that she was always looking for a better life and material wealth, and when she was not fulfilled easily, she chose the murderous path. She managed to get cyanide from jewelry shops where it was often used to clean gold. The police ruled out any psychopathic tendencies on her and attributed the murders to robbery. They claimed that each murder earned her around 25 to 30,000 Indian rupees. It was difficult for police to believe that a 45-year-old harmless-looking woman was capable of committing such heinous crimes. Kempamma was alleged to have killing one more victim, a 22-year-old woman named Renuka. Renuka's husband Shankar had filed a complaint at the Meeko Layout police station on December 29, 2006, stating that his wife Renuka was missing since December 7th. He said that he was on a tour to Dubai when Renuka went missing. In the same month, Renuka's body was found at the Kaivara Yogi Narayana Ashram guest house in Kolar district. Renuka's sister Mani, who worked as a domestic worker in a house where Kempamma worked as a cook, was the one who asserted that Kempamma could have murdered Renuka. The reason why Mani blamed Kempamma for her sister Renuka's death was because Kempamma visited Mani's house quite often and had befriended Renuka. At that time, Renuka was staying with Mani at Mani's house while her husband was away working in Dubai. Allegedly, Kempamma told Renuka that she could give birth to a male baby if Kempamma conducted a special ritual at a temple. And we all know Kempamma conducting rituals never ends well. So it was justified why Mani suspected Kempamma. The police asserted that Kempamma murdered Renuka at the temple. Many other families have also come forward claiming that their missing family may have been murdered by Kempamma, as Kempamma knew all of them. 5 cases of missing persons were associated with Kempamma in 2009, out of which 2 of these 5 women's bodies were found and subsequently linked to Kempamma. Police were yet to make a thorough investigation on the linking of the remaining victims. DCP K.V. Sharath Chandra said, and I quote, "We are collecting details of the murder that took place in the temple premises during the last 2 years. We are asking medical experts if they have come across any cases of cyanide poisoning. Efforts are on to trace those who supplied the deadly drugs to the killer," end quote. However, one question that arises in my mind and might have in yours too is that Renuka was found dead in the year 2006, but it was said Kempamma was off killing since 7 years at that point and she only started her killing spree again somewhat in October 2007. There are no solid reports mentioning to whom Renuka's murder was traced back to. Or was Kempamma really convicted of Renuka's murder? No reports, no answers, nothing. By telling you guys this, the point I'm trying to prove here is that it is very difficult to get complete and reliable information about Indian serial killer cases. There is very little or adulterated information available on them. And this being a woman's case was even more difficult. To be honest, Kempamma was not even considered as a serial killer in the start. She was considered to be more of a thief who started killing for money. Why? Because we as Indian society were not ready to accept a female serial killer. Because the traditional image of Indian female in our society is limited to being a selfless human, giving birth, nurturing lives, loving unconditionally, being dutiful to her family. And this list can go on and on. So, it's not possible for a traditional Indian woman to even think of killing somebody, let alone executing it. Criminally, of course, crimes are not gender specific. Cyanide Mallika's story uncovered a larger myth. And I quote, "Women don't kill unless they've been violated or abused or are trying to protect themselves or their children. They just don't kill," end quote. Although we always try to justify the brutality of murders by reaching back in time to find something that went horribly wrong during a killer's former years, Kempamma's early life offers no such clues as there is little to no details about the time. Dr. Rajni, a prison psychiatrist, made a conventional observation, and I quote, "Most women who commit murder in India have been married off before the age of 18 and have endured bad marriage, sexual abuse, violence and poverty," end quote. And yet this is only the half truth because Kempamma admitted that she wasn't a victim of the above fortunate circumstances. Killing and robbery was simply a means to an end for her. Upon reading of the facts surrounding the murders, it leads us to believe this, that Kempamma was motivated solely by financial gain and nothing else. According to Bonn, an expert in the psychiatry field, quote, "The most common female serial killer is what is known as a comfort or gain killer. They are killing for some material end. Female serial killers tend to be more practical in their reasoning for killing than male," end quote. Police had described Kempamma as a habitual thief who started a killing spree and murdered 7 women. Cyanide Mallika's entire story still remains to be a mystery, but you guys do let me know your thoughts on this topic on my Instagram. Fortunately, Kempamma is no longer at loose. The police nabbed her after her 7th murder. Kempamma was convicted of multiple murders in separate trials. According to City Police Commissioner Neelam Achyut Rao, Kempamma had been wanted in at least 6 cases till now in various districts including Bangalore, Ramanagara, Tumkur and Mandya. Kempamma has several aliases that she has been using in executing her crimes, namely Kempamma, Jayamma, Lakshmi and Savitrima, and of course Mallika. In 2010, she was given a death sentence for the murder of Muniyamma by a Tumkur court. The judge found Kempamma guilty in the case and awarded her death penalty. In 2012, the first additional rural court sentenced Kempamma to death for the murder of Nagveni. This sentence was awarded by Judge Singri in the connection with the murders of Nagveni. The court examined 33 witnesses before announcing the verdict in one of the cases, making Kempamma the first woman to be given death penalty in Karnataka. Not only that, she is also said to be the India's first female serial killer. Police initially charged her with 6 murders, but as I mentioned before, there were 5 missing complaints that were associated with Kempamma. And during investigation, 2 of the missing women's bodies were found and linked to Kempamma. Police Inspector S.K. Umesh of Kalsipalyam, where Kempamma was arrested, had investigated the case and had filed for a charge sheet. He told the press association, and I quote, "I collected information about missing persons and murders in and around Bangalore. I noticed that they were all killed with the same MO. Many women were missing after the case in 2007 and were found to be killed by her. Some women were from places outside my jurisdiction, but since I found a link, I followed the case and collected credible information. There are 7 more trial cases against her in different courts. The hanging will probably take place after more than 6 months, since there are more cases pending against her. End quote. He further added, and I quote, "The court's verdicts will act as a deterrent to criminals. This sentence will definitely affect the crime rate in Bangalore. Once we get sentences like these, it affects the psychology of the criminal and will lead to a lower crime rate. There is a risk of losing your life, so it definitely affects people." End quote. However, the Karnataka High Court reduced her death penalty to life imprisonment at Bangalore's Parapana Agrahara Central Jail. A division bench headed by Justice D.V. Shailendra Kumar reduced the sentence of a criminal appeal filed by Kempamma challenging the order awarded by the court at Tumkur on March of 24, 2009. It is a normal practice that any death sentence would have to be confirmed by the High Court. After hearing the High Court dismissed the sentence, stating that the session court had passed the judgments without allowing the public prosecutor to conduct cross-examination of Dr. Ashwant Narayan, who had conducted the autopsy of the deceased Nagvini. This is incorrect. Hence, a retrial has been ordered. The court had also imposed a fine of 10,000 rupees on Kempamma and, in case of default, to undergo rigorous imprisonment for 1 year. Observing that though there was circumstantial evidences, there was no direct proof against her, and though she had committed murders for gain, it does not come under the category of rarest of the rare crimes to be accorded to death sentence. To be precise, Kempamma's death sentence was reduced to life imprisonment, and currently she is serving her life term in Parampana Agrahara prison for killing 7 women. And with that, we come to the end of today's episode. Let me know your thoughts on Saina and Malika's case on Instagram. The handle is Sins of Asia. I hope you found this episode informative. If you did, then do not forget to give your precious ratings and reviews, as it immensely helps the podcast. And please take a moment to also follow the podcast. New podcast with a fresh sin from Asia will go live every Friday. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I hope you make good choices and don't become a criminal. Bye guys, and I hope to catch you for the next sin.